From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, you're listening to Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. Happy Saturday. It is April 4th. Well, earlier this week on Wednesday, the Farming Country crew headed down to Trout Town, USA to mark the first cast of trout fishing season. The Catskills streams and lakes have a long and rich history of fly fishing. We talked to anglers at Junction Pool in Roscoe about the joys of this beloved sport. Plus, Rosie Starr sat down with Bob and Peggy Simons, owner of Morning Sun Farm in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. The couple married in 1969, and today they make flavorful maple syrup in their sap house. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report on NASA's Artemis II mission. But first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. U.S. forces are searching for a missing service member after two American fighter jets were shot down over Iran on Friday. Two crew members have been rescued. NPR's Dee Parvez reports on how Iranian state media is covering the search.
State media has televised a call-out asking for nomadic tribes and local villagers to target any foreign pilots in the area. The announcement includes a monetary reward for any capture. A U.S. official confirmed to NPR that a search and rescue operation is in progress.
That's NPR's Dee Parvez reporting. Israel says it's carried out a new wave of strikes on what it calls regime infrastructure in Tehran. The military says it hit air defense sites and facilities tied to weapons storage and research. Iran continues to fire at neighboring countries. It damaged a desalination plant in Kuwait on Friday, but Iran state media have confirmed that one of its own plants is still fully out of service. The government says it was hit by an airstrike. NPR's Julia Simon reports experts say attacks on plants that create fresh water are increasingly becoming a weapon of war.
Desalination is the process of using electricity to separate seawater into a salty solution on one side and fresh water on the other. Across the Middle East, countries rely heavily on the process. Qatar and Bahrain get more than 90% of their drinking water from it. As climate change increases the severity of droughts, experts see desalination plants as a key adaptation tool. Since the recent war began, strikes have hit plants in Iran, as well as Kuwait and Bahrain. Earlier this week, President Trump wrote on social media that the U.S. may strike more Iranian desalination plants. Civilian infrastructure sites like water plants are banned as targets by international law. Julia Simon, NPR News.
The CDC is warning of an illicit drug that's often found alongside fentanyl in some parts of the country. NPR's Ping Wong reports it can cause dangerous withdrawal symptoms.
Dr. Michael Lynch is an ER physician based in Pittsburgh. He started seeing overdoses involving metatomidine some 2 years ago. The powerful sedative is often mixed with fentanyl, but fentanyl overdose drugs don't work on it.
So people would start breathing again, but they wouldn't wake up, even after people got naloxone or Narcan.
Patients also came in delirious, agitated, with very high heart rates and not responding to typical medications.
So what we were seeing is tenfold increases in people needing ICU care for withdrawal.
According to the CDC, the drug is most prevalent in the Northeast U.S., though it's also showing up more in the Midwest and the South. Ping Huang, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dole. Well, spring has definitely sprung and folks are getting ready, preparing their homes, communities, and even themselves for the warmer weather and some of the busiest, most exciting months of the year. And we here at Radio Catskill are getting ready too, preparing for some new and exciting things ourselves, along with even more of the great local coverage, conversations, and culture that you rely on. Here's what folks are saying.
I do listen to Radio Catskill.
Absolutely. Every morning.
I just love having it on in the car.
It lets me know what's going on in my community, and it gives me good news. It
gives me the best information about what's happening in the community and about what's happening in the world.
I love Jason Dole for the local goings-on.
It's a very good news source.
I love the local. I love the farm and country. You name it. I just love it all. Everything.
It plays my favorite music.
There's great jazz shows.
Some of the late-night programs where they play, like, odd music.
Sometimes my friends are on it, so I listen to them play.
It's my people. It's my community.
It's been my company. So it's never off. In fact, I have it on for my dog now.
Thanks to everyone for their kind words, and thank you for your continuing support. Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive starts this week, and we will need your help. Spread the word and give what you can now at WJFFradio.org. Keep public radio in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania and help us continue to grow, thrive, and serve our region well into the future. Plant this seed here in this season of renewal. Do it at WJFFradio.org. Thank you so much for listening and for supporting Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. RWJF is a national philanthropy working toward a future where health is no longer a privilege, but a right. Learn more at rwjf.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange, Sullivan, and Rockland, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. Information at CFOSRNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. So this past Wednesday was April 1st. Yes, it was April Fool's Day, but also, yes, it was opening day for trout fishing season. This is such a special time of year for us here in the Catskills. Every single year, anglers and fly fishing enthusiasts in Trout Town, USA, or Roscoe, New York, to most, gather at Junction Pool to celebrate this special, special day. They've been doing this since the 1940s. Farming Country producer Ronald Kelson and I woke up very bright and early to be there for the first cast. Here is more from the scene.
Okay, we're ready to go.
Manny Zanger reels back his rod's fishing line at Junction Pool in Roscoe, New York, where he's just made the first cast of fly fishing season. There's a crowd of several dozen people behind him, and Zanger, who is a renowned fly fisher, stands quietly along the waters, waiting for the perfect moment to catch a fish. He says he couldn't believe how many people were there that morning.
I mean, 7 o'clock is bright and early, and everybody seems to be in this on the same thing with me, and we all enjoyed it much as I did. So I think it's just a wonderful thing to have. It really is. And the sport of fly fishing and fly tying is just... it's just one of the best. Once you get involved, it is the best.
And how long have you been fly fishing for? What did that beginnings look like for you?
I've been coming up here because I'm not a native to the area, but I've been coming into this area probably since the late 60s, early 70s. So, yeah, I've been here, and it's just a wonderful... I haven't lived that far. I live about maybe 50 miles away when I did come up. So, anyway, we'd come up on... whenever we could and fish, and I just fell in love with it. Yeah, I fell in love with it.
And when you're, you know, when you're out on the waters, mm-hmm. how would you describe what that feels like for you?
Well, you know, if you look at the water and you watch, you know, you don't fish right away. You always check the water, see what's happening, what's going on, if there's any activity, fly activity. And then, you know, if there's none, then you go to the next step, maybe a nymph or a streamer. And hopefully later on during the day, you see a fly hatch. And when that occurs, it's lightning. It is lightning. It explodes. And they catch fish on a fly, especially one that you have tied. Can't really say anything more about it. It's just a wonderful thing, experience.
Fly fishing is a popular fishing technique where fishers use small, lightweight flies to mimic aquatic insects. Anglers rely on the weight of the line, rod length, and other factors for a successful cast. Fisherman Aaron Blakely, who owns local trout bar and restaurant The Junction, says the intricate technique adds to the magic.
What makes it fun and difficult is instead of casting like with a spinning reel where the weight of the lure is what creates the momentum. It's the weight of the line, and so it's all about line management, keeping everything in the air, keeping it smooth and consistent, and it's kind of more art form than like brute force, and it makes it really challenging and fun.
Zenger dedicated the first cast to Agnes Van Putt, a beloved fixture of Livingston Manor's fly fishing community who died in January. Zenger also gifted Judy Van Putt, a celebrated fly fisher and Agnes's daughter-in-law, a special fly.
It's an Adams fly.
Adams fly.
Which was Adams's, which was Agnes's son, my husband, Ed. His favorite fly.
Judy Van Putt said Agnes was a special woman, loved by many.
She was a giving person. She brought love and happiness to everyone. She just gave all from her heart. I was fortunate enough to have her as my mother-in-law for 48 years, and she taught me a lot. It was very special.
For Van Putt, fly fishing brings her a sense of calm during the busyness of the world.
It's a sense of peace. It's a sense of assimilation with nature, thankfulness for being able to be in such a beautiful place and have these wonderful waters to fish. It brings back many happy memories of fishing with my husband and fishing with dear friends who are no longer with us.
The sport is also about creating new memories. Natalie Phelan is an 8-year-old, 7th-generation fly fisher. She was at the first cast on Wednesday morning with her whole family.
Can I ask you how long you have been fly fishing for?
My whole life.
Your whole life?
Yeah, the first time I caught a fish, I was over 1 year old, I think.
And what would you say is your favorite thing about fly fishing?
I can go in the water and I don't have to do anything but stand and cast.
Her grandfather, Jeffrey Phelan, was fishing alongside Natalie.
We're used to a little lower water and a little clearer water, but you know what? We're having fun out here, and you know, this is a tradition for her, you know, that we just started.
Natalie and the Phelan family plan to have many more first casts to come. In Roscoe, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill. And again, thank you so much to everyone I spoke with. Keep in mind that opening weekend festivities continue into this weekend. The Catskill Fly Fishing Center and Museum will celebrate Agnes Van Putt's life, serving her legendary soups. I've heard that there might be some rum cake at the event and other original recipes. That's happening today, April 4th, from 12 to 3 p.m. at the museum. Well, NASA's Artemis II mission lifted off on Wednesday on its mission around the moon and back. Our very own Keith Herbert has the latest with this week's Star Talk report.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Herbert, and this is Star Talk. On Wednesday, NASA's Artemis II mission lifted off from Launch Pad 39B at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Artemis II is NASA's first mission with crew aboard the Space Launch System rocket and Orion spacecraft. The mission will test the rocket system's capabilities that will be needed on deep space missions. There are 4 crew members of Artemis II. NASA astronauts Reid Wiseman, Victor Glover, Christina Cook, and Canadian Space Agency astronaut Jeremy Hansen. Their 10-day mission will take them farther from Earth and closer to the Moon than any humans have been in over half a century. They will complete a lunar flyby in the Orion spacecraft while conducting studies on astronaut health and making observations of lunar features. On their flyby of the Moon, the Orion spacecraft will fly past the far side of the Moon, the side that always faces away from Earth. The spacecraft will be on the far side of the Moon for 3 hours, during which time the astronauts will analyze and photograph geologic features. The astronauts will be 4 to 6,000 miles from the Moon's surface. This mission is a critical step in NASA's plan to return to the Moon. NASA is planning the first Artemis lunar landing in early 2028. NASA further plans to launch one lunar mission per year afterward and to build a lunar base. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future StarTalk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and StarTalk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith for that report. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, Rosie Starr takes us inside a maple sap house. Stay with us.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Sign up for Radio Catskill's free weekly newsletter. Get the latest local news, culture, and things to do in your inbox every Friday. Stay connected and informed with Radio Catskills newsletter. Subscribe at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, maple sapping season is in full swing here in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. And this morning, Rosie Starr is taking us on a journey to Morning Sun Farm in Wayne County, Pennsylvania. Peggy and Bob Simons are the owners of the small maple farm where they make fresh, local, and delicious maple syrup. Here is Rosie's conversation with Peggy and Bob.
I'm over in Damascus, deep in the countryside, at the home of Bob and Peggy Simons, who I met on the Wayne County Maple Tour 2026, and I chose their farm, Morning Sun Farm, because it was small. I saw the amount of buckets that they had, and I said, I want to go to the smallest one. Why? I'm not sure, but when I met them and I came here, I know why.
I get to my maple syrup interest from my mother's side because my father's a Southerner. My mother was the Yankee in the family. So I inherited liking maple syrup from her. There was always a tin can of syrup in the refrigerator that we had when we had mini breakfasts with company. We always had maple syrup. I was a teacher at both Preston and Damascus, and then we adopted two children, so I wasn't working. And I sort of wanted to do things at home because I wasn't working.
We began working for the Wayne Highland School District in 1970. She was teaching way up in the Preston School, and I was at Honesdale High School and remained at Honesdale High School. We liked it here. We wanted to own property, so we started reading the classified ads for land that was for sale. And we saw that this property was advertised, was part of the Norman Dennis farm. We negotiated with him. Land values weren't the same in 1970 as they are now, and started our own back-to-the-land enterprise here before we had a house on the place, actually. We didn't build until 1974, but before that we were planting apple trees and considering what else might be done with the place. A good friend, Sam Brewster, came over one day with a coil of tubing and a drill and a small 2x2 pan and said, you know, come on, we're gonna make tap some maple trees and make maple syrup. He got us interested in it, and the first trees that we tapped are the ones right at the start end of our maple tubing line right now. And we built a little stone arch that we could put that pan on and build a fire under it, and we boiled sap for the first time. So we've been going since 79, getting a little bit bigger, but not anywhere near at the rate of growth of most other maple producers. We've stayed small. We've never had more than 300 taps. And a lot of people who started much later than we did are in the thousands now. But I never made this my full-time job. I was teaching English, you know, in high school. So this was a sideline. It's interesting because now that I'm retired, you know, the Maple has survived. I still have that to do. A little harder to do now, but we've enjoyed it. And it was always the rescue from dismal March weather. Because March is hard to get through. You're hoping for spring. You get teas with some warm days now and then, but mostly it's back to awful. And when you're doing Maple, those returns that normally disappoint you are good because they reprime the pump. You're going back to the start level. Like this cold that we have right now will produce another run. As if we get at least one more warm-up, the sap will run in the tree. And if we have the energy to keep going and the firewood to keep going, then we will be making more maple syrup. So it was a way of making March a hopeful month and pleasurable and inducing an intimate relationship with nature in a way that happens for everybody, I think, in the spring, later in the spring. But this helped it come earlier. That spring that was there in the tree that you got to know as a result of drilling a few holes in the tree and tapping the sap out of it.
To me, it's just like the blood in a person. The blood is so important, but for the tree, it's the sap.
March is that way. It's like a roller coaster. Tell us this year, how did you make out? When I came on the tour was lively, it was well attended, the sap was flowing. But since then, it's been a roller coaster up and down. Tell us what your challenges are for this year.
The tour day, this is rare, was actually a prime sap run and boiling day. Often we have guests come up the driveway and see the operation, and we really don't have anything going on because the weather hasn't been exactly right. Or we'll fake it a little bit, put some water in the evaporator and boil that. I know some producers do that just so there's some steam coming off the equipment. But we had actual sap and we're making syrup. We even had it available to taste, you know, as soon as it's coming off the evaporator, here's some fresh syrup to taste. So that was a good weekend. I think since then we've had at least two monster sap runs that have required us to get out there and dump full buckets and, you know, and exercise. I never lifted so many things above my shoulder level as in sap season to get the sap into the gathering tank. It's a curse of plenty, I guess, this year.
I know the weather is very much a factor. But also your age. I'm impressed. I look at you and say, you appear to be super seniors. I don't know what your age is, but I see the significance of what you're doing here. Let's talk about the challenge of your age and being able to keep up with us.
That's on my mind a lot. We will both turn 80 this summer, Peggy, so soon. We'll be octogenarians, and I think that doing the maple is beneficial. I think it helps keep us purposeful, and actually, you know, I don't have to go to the gym. I'm getting plenty of exercise here. I know my balance is when I'm collecting buckets, I'm collecting over some pretty rough ground. And I have to be very careful. My balance isn't as good as it used to be. I will, instead of carrying two buckets, I'll carry one bucket of sap and a cane in the other hand so that I can steady myself. So it goes at half the speed, but it still gets done. So I feel like as long as we can do that,
as long as you can put a snowshoe on, yeah. Which is hard to even do when bending over is hard.
Yeah. It's like, well, why aren't you completely on tubing then? You wouldn't have to be carrying any buckets. We do have 140 taps on tubing, 50 on buckets. And it's true that this time of year, when the sap is running, as long as the tubing is not broken anywhere or leaking, it is easier. But tubing presents its own problems, like trees falling down on it. Buckets, you hang them up for the season, and so they're only subject to the ravages of weather and predation during the season. But tubing is up year-round, and so all kinds of things can happen to your lines during, you know, later spring, summer, fall, and winter.
Squirrels.
And that was hard for me this year because we had so many trees. There are a lot of dead ash trees in the woods. They're starting to fall down. They take down sap lines with them, so I had a much tougher pre-tapping season this year getting the woods ready because I had to clean up first and then get to the tapping and trudge through, you know, pretty deep snow to do so. That part is challenging. Buckets, at least, you wait until the moment the sap is about, it's running. And so then you go tap the tree, and when that's finished, you take the buckets down, take them back and clean them. So some of the old ways of doing things make some sense in terms of maintenance and cleaning. I mean, that's the other thing with tubing is you have to, it's much harder to wash it. You got to pump water under pressure through those lines to clean them up. Yeah, so 80 years old. About this time in the season, Peggy usually declares, this is it. This is the last year. And it may be. You know, I'll tell you, it looks like we're going to have a pretty good amount of product at the end. So it's tempting to end on a high note and say, well, that was a good year. Now we'll, you know, keep that inventory for as long as we can, but not going to get out there and work on it anymore. But I think that by the time sap season rolls around next year, we would want to be out there. Maybe we've already scaled back by a third. We only have 2/3 of the woods that we had 3 years ago. We could take out another section and just go smaller and gradually fade out, you know. I think that as long as the maple business keeps us moving, you know, using our bodies, and we're not laid up with some illness or other, or don't have a fall that breaks bones, I'm for keeping going. But that's an issue that's going to have to be hashed out between the two of us.
Your lives and the sap, you're going with the flow of your life. As they approach their 80th birthdays, they continue to harvest trees for firewood and cut grass that is used for mulch and hay for neighbors. Bob fishes for bass in their pond and Peggy gardens growing flowers. Part of the land is used for an orchard, and they have aspirations of making cider from their apple orchard. Their maple syrup has been awarded ribbons from the state farm shows, and they continue to sweeten the month of March with fresh maple syrup. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr.
Thanks so much to Rosie for such a special conversation. Before we sign off, just a few things happening in the community over the next couple weeks. Like I mentioned, opening day weekend for trout fishing continues into this weekend in Roscoe and Livingston Manor. The Livingston Manor Chamber of Commerce will host their annual Trout About Town scavenger hunt. That's happening today until tomorrow. And then next Saturday, April 11th from 9 a.m. to noon, the Mammocating Environmental Education Center is seeking participants for their spring garden and trail cleanup. Refreshments will be provided throughout the morning, and participants can expect to be weeding the native garden, cleaning up trails, and removing invasive plants. More info on our community calendar on our website at wjffradio.org. And that's all for this week's show. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Stick around. Up next, it is Catskill Character with Donna Fellenberg. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, NPR. I'll catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from
Morgan Outdoors, celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.
Last week